We're continuing the Ramban, Torah Hashem Tmimah, and we're concluding the first chapter where the Ramban had quoted the Rambam, the Ramban had been developing the idea that any nation that you see doing some things which are right, it's because they were affected by the Torah. And then he brings this to its evolvement, to its conclusion with the Rambam, that said that this is the Rambam's opinion. I don't think he has a source for it, but the Rambam says that the effects of Christianity and Islam are paving the path for the Mashiach to come, because being that Islam and Christianity have spread through the world, so the world is cognizant of the concept of a Mashiach. The world is cognizant of a Torah, of a system that comes from heaven, in mitzvot, and people discuss it. People discuss, what does it say in the Torah? What's the system I'm supposed to go with? Elu umay mitzvot, elu emet. Some people say, these mitzvot are true. Hayu kvar batlu mizman hazev, lo yun hagot ledorot. So the Christians want to say, the mitzvot are gone already, but they were true. They're just not relevant today. So other groups say, no. The mitzvahs are relevant till today, but don't take them literally. They all have symbolism. They're not to be taken literally. And the Messiah told us how to observe the mitzvahs of the Torah. Says the Rambam. But when Mashiach will truly come, he will be successful, he will be exalted. So then they're going to be not so distant from the truth. At least they're in the ballpark. He says, before Christianity and Islam, people were pagans, people were all over the place. And when people were there, so then when you start talking to them about Torah and mitzvos, you're talking to them about a paradigm shift that's so sharp that they can't accept it. It's a system that's so foreign to them. But Islam and Christianity, says the Rambam, as far off as they are, they have brought to the world concepts that puts them in the ballpark, that Judaism is something that they can connect to. You see, the world today calls it the Judeo-Christian ethic, right?
Monotheism, with certainly with Islam.
Yeah, or monotheism, right. So there are terms. There's the Rambam in Igeret Teiman writes, he says, only a person who doesn't understand what Judaism is can think that Christianity or Islam are like Judaism. They have laws and they have laws. They have mitzvahs and they have mitzvahs. They're not compared. If you compare them, says the Rambam, they don't understand the heart. It's like saying a statue is like a human being. You study a human being, you understand the sophistication and what really is a human being. Every part of what keeps a human being living. You look at a statue and you say, okay, it's a piece of marble in a certain shape. There's a resemblance, nowhere near the sophistication of what a human being is or can do his whole life, right? So too, says the Rambam, are these other religions compared to Judaism. Nonetheless, that's the Rambam in Igeret Teiman. The Rambam in the Laws of Kings writes that the bottom line is that they have paved the path. And that path has brought the world a step closer to the recognition of the Torah. They now at least recognize the concept of godly commandments, the concept of a Messiah. And so they will return. And then they'll recognize that their forefathers and their prophets misled them. And then they'll be open and they'll grow within their knowledge of the Torah. So with that, we end the first chapter of this speech. And we're going to begin the second chapter, Sipurei Torah. We're going to talk about the stories in the Torah, which is very fitting for us now as we read the book of Bereishis, Genesis. The Torah is enlightening. Also, with the stories that we read in Torah. We go through stories of Torah, well, they teach us things. Kulam, chokhmah gdolah v'shoshe emunah. They are all great wisdom in the roots of the emunah, which you might translate as faith. Sharei, ata yodeh mipshutei haktuvim. You know from the literal reading of the text, shamram avi Moshe ra Levi. Says, take one point in our tradition. If you read the text, you can easily figure out, make a family tree, write down the length of their years, and you see that Moshe's father, Amram, saw his grandfather, Levi. Okay? Levi was one of the 12 tribes. So from Levi to Moshe, You have Levi, Moshe's father Amram, and Moshe, right? Levi, who was Yaakov. He saw Yaakov Avinu. And Yaakov learned Torah from Vehu Lamad Torah Mipi. Who did Yaakov learn Torah from? This week's parasha, Shem ben Noach. He went to learn Torah by Shem. So Yaakov Avinu was connected to a person who saw the flood. If we want to know from Moshe Rabbeinu till the flood, there were many, many years, right? 1,000 years. But what? But it's very close. Shem was born in the year 1,558. And the Mabul was in 1,656. Moshe Rabbeinu...
He was not yet
100, right? Very good. Moshe Rabbeinu was born in the year 2448 minus 80. Help me out here. Is 2368. Right. Thank you. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. 2368. So that's almost 700 years later after the flood. But from Moshe to the flood, he has his father to Levi, to Yaakov, to Shem. Okay? Shem saw the flood. He taught Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov to Levi. Levi to Amram to Moshe. So it's not such a far...
Why wouldn't Moshe have learned by Levi?
What?
Why wouldn't Moshe have learned by Levi?
I don't know if there was an overlap. I don't know if Levi was still around when Moshe was born. This type of thinking, which the Ramban is presenting now, Rabbi Beryl Wine once told us with regards to the Seder night, that when we approach the Seder night, we should figure we're in the 21st century, right? And we all hope to be around in the second half of the 21st century. We saw the second half of the 20th century, right? And I met my grandfather, who was in the beginning of the 20th century. My grandfather was born, I don't know, 1910. My grandfather saw people who were around in the middle of the 19th century. So between my grandfather, let's say my grandfather saw the people he knew in his town, the rabbis he quotes me stories about were the 1860s, 1870s. So my grandfather connects me to the 1800s. And I connect to 2050, 2080, right? We'll see how long I live. So between two people, you connect 300 years. Now, if you think of it that way, so let's go back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Three people, let's say each person connects 100 years. But really it's more, because we overlap. We meet people who overlap and connect us. So let's say you take... how many people does it take to get back to Yetzias Mitzrayim? 2448. You need to get 2400. That means about 24 people, even less. But let's say 24 people between us and Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Exodus that we're talking about, the tradition. I heard the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim from my grandfather. My grandfather in the year was born in the beginning of the 1900s. And I'm telling it to my kids who, Bezrat Hashem, will live into the 2100s. So you have two people who connect you over 300 years. It's when you look at it that way, it's not so far back to go all the way back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now that concept is not Rabbi Beryl Wine's invention. Here, the Ramban just said it. The Ramban said, read the stories of the Torah, and you can see the overlap. Yaakov learned from Shem, the son of Noach. That's in this week's parasha. Ki ben chamishim shana haya Yaakov kshemet Shem. Yaakov was 50 years old when Shem passed away. Who's going to declare there's a great nation now? Moshe Rabbeinu, who grows up among the sorcerers and stargazers. Moshe Rabbeinu proudly stood up and declared, Avi Higid. I'm telling you, Pharaoh's telling you he's a god. My father told me, Ki Avi Aviv, Ozkeno Shel Avi Aviv. My father told me that his grandfather or his great-grandfather, Rabbi Atonim, saw the creation of the world. What are you saying, Pharaoh, you created the world? I know you didn't create the world. Because I met people who saw the Chafetz Chaim. right? The Chafetz Chaim takes you all the way back to the beginning of the 1800s. So I asked how the Chafetz Chaim was dressed, how the Chafetz Chaim looked. We had a guest in our house. There was a man who lived here. His name was Sar Shalom. So one night, one Shabbos day, I was going to shul with my kids, and we saw this old man sitting alone. So I sat next to him in the davening, and at the end of davening, I said, where are you eating after davening? So he said, at home. I said, do you have family? He said, no, my wife passed away a long time ago. I got children who live far away. So I said, okay, why don't you come eat by us? So he said, I have a little bit of food on the plot. I said, right, but why should you eat alone? Come to eat by us. So he said, fine. He was with a walker. I sent one of the kids home to update my wife, and we went home with him. I thought I was doing him a favor. But as the meal progressed, I start hearing from him stories. He met the Chafetz Chaim. He's telling me stories like, wow. At the end of the meal, I suddenly realized who I'm sitting next to. No, it's not Sar Shalom. That was a different person I invited. This is the person, I don't remember his name, who translated, he's the one who translated Rav Mendel Hirsch's commentary on the Haftarot. I don't remember his name. But he was an older gentleman who lived in this neighborhood. And he's telling me stories about the time he met the Chafetz Chaim. Okay, so we had over here in the neighborhood, also passed away in this decade, Rav Zuckerman. He was an older rabbi who also he met the Chafetz Chaim. And many of my friends learned by him every week. So you have connections, says the Ramban. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he had to stand up to Paro, he said, my father told me that his grandfather or his grandfather's father saw creation. Why, says the Ramban? He says there's a fundamental point. With the flood, the world hit a reset button. It was just like creation, in the sense that Adam looked around and said, no one here but me. All of you are my descendants. He could testify, I don't have parents. God created me, and you're all my kids. Well, after the flood, Noah could do the same thing. The whole world could look back to him and say, he's our grandpa. Whoever is going to admit there was a flood, he has to admit that the world was created, had a starting point. In other words, there is a creator, there is miracles, there is someone who gave Noah a warning to build an ark. So, Ve'od shayasham Noach shirat Adam HaRishon. Shem spoke to Noach. Noach saw Adam. They overlapped, Noach and Adam.
Right, so he had access to his father? What? Moshe had access to his father?
That's a great question. That's a...
Because I'm really confused.
Right. That's a great question. That's a really good question. I don't know where the Ramban gets this from. Let's start again. Moshe's father, Amram, raised him until age 2, it would seem. And after that, I don't know of a source that describes the continued relationship between Moshe and his family. However, the fact that Chazal tell us that Pharaoh's daughter who adopted Moshe, in the Torah she doesn't have a name. In the Torah it says, Vateret bat paro lirchotz alai or. Pharaoh's daughter went down. In Chronicles, in Divrei Hayamim, we learn about a Bit Yah, the daughter of Hashem. Chazal tell us that Bit Yah, Bat Yah, is what we easily say, Pharaoh's daughter is Batya, the daughter of Pharaoh. Well, it's not so simple. Yeah. Pharaoh didn't call his daughter Batya, the daughter of Hashem, right? That's the name she took on when she became a Gioret, when she converted. So our tradition is that when she went into the Nile, she was converting. There's a beautiful pshat by Rav Harlap on this. Rav Harlap says everyone worshipped the Nile. No one dared use the Nile. They would use offshoots of the Nile. No one would bathe in the Nile. He says the idea that she went into the Nile to bathe was a declaration. You're nothing. You're no God. You're going to serve me. I need to wash. You're going to be my bath. That, he says, that's what our sages say that Batya converted, because she rejected the philosophy the Egyptians were promoting that the Nile is a god. She went to bathe in the Nile. That was a declaration. This Nile is a river like every other river, and I can bathe in it. So when she went to bathe in the river, then she finds Moshe. There, our sages say, she was adopting the Jewish path. She went into the Nile as a moment of conversion. Not that she needed a mikveh, because there wasn't yet a bathe and there wasn't yet a mikveh. She went into the Nile as a way of converting, of declaring, I don't believe in this anymore. Now, if Batya was adopting the Jewish monotheism, she probably wanted to learn by Amram and Yocheved, who were the Gdolei Ador. And she probably found every excuse to have a connection with them. And that would explain, this is all hypothetical, but that would explain why Moshe has a connection with Aaron, and our sages assume that Moshe had a connection with his father and mother. We would wonder why. What connection is he supposed to have? At age two, he sort of parted ways with them and went to grow up in Pharaoh's palace. It seems not that way. It seems that there continued to be a connection, even though I'm still searching. I have not yet found a source for this idea that they maintained the connection. Okay, so that's in response to Gilad's question, that Moshe's declaration, my father told me, well, the Ramban certainly is assuming that Moshe retained the relationship with his father. That's true. That's true. It's a very valid point. As far as shame and Adam Arishan overlapping, so the commentaries point out that if you look at the numbers, that doesn't work. Adam Arishan lived to 930 years. If you do the math, it would seem that Noach was born in the year 1056, right? If the Mabel was at 1558, and Noach was 600 years, so that means that Noach was born in the year 1056, right? If the Mabel was at 11656, and so Noach was born in the year 1056. So that means there wasn't a direct overlap. So even though the Ramban says it, either he means he saw his descendants, or the somehow in the transmission something here got lost. It doesn't seem to work, the numbers. Okay, we have to add one link between Noach and Adam Arishan. It's not the end of the world to say, he saw Shet who saw Adam Arishan or something like that. But okay, that's just a technical comment. So we're up to here that the link from Moshe Rabbeinu back to Adam Arishon, that he knows he's the only one who has no father and mother. Adam Arishon knew with clarity, there's no one else here except for my descendants, and I don't have a father and mother. So then the link from Moshe to the recognition of creation was very short. That's what the Ramban is trying to illustrate. And that Moshe was able to contest the beliefs of the Egyptians with this confidence, with this tradition that he had. Should we go on to another topic or develop this a little bit more deeply? Okay. So I just want to point out some concepts that the Ramban is assuming in making this argument. The first is that one respects their parents and trusts them. We've been living in an era where this doesn't happen. Today, people say, who says dad's telling the truth? Who says he knows? But generally, the assumption was, my parents are telling me the truth. They're not lying to me. Now, that's assumption number one. In order for us to say that Moshe could stand with confidence and say, my father told me, and his father told him, and his father told him, and it's only five links to Adam, and I know that the world was created, well, you have to trust the links. I'll tell you in all honesty about myself, that when I was growing up, I was not very trusting of the tradition. And when my teachers would say, here, you see, Rashi used this word, so he meant that, I would say, who says? Maybe Rashi didn't mean that at all. Why are you so convinced? He used this word or that word. Maybe Rashi wasn't focused, so he wrote it this way or that way. And only years later, when I saw Rashi's own responsa, Rashi's own letters, when I saw Rambam's responsa, And I saw how Rambam responded to people who asked him questions. And he said, didn't you notice I used this word instead of that word? Didn't you notice I put this halacha in this order? This came first and that came second. And I saw how they assumed anyone that read their works was going to analyze exactly which word, exactly which ordering. Then I realized that, sure, that's a given. That's how they spoke. They were on that level. We have a hard time thinking about every sentence we say. It's very hard. But they were on that level. You see it from their response. That's how they thought. That's how they wrote. They were very careful how they worded things. Okay, once I recognized that, I started having a tremendous respect for Rashi, for Rambam, for our tradition. I started seeing, wow, okay, there's amazing people giving over this tradition. I'm willing to trust them. When you start seeing reasons to respect, to trust, you say, okay, I'll trust them. You hit the Rashi in Tanakh, where Rashi says, we have a Medrash, says Rashi, that gives us all the Psukim in Torah that have the full alphabet in the Pasuk. Right? There's a Medrash called Masorah, and this Medrash lists every Pasuk in Torah that has the complete alphabet. If you look at every Pasuk in Torah, almost every Pasuk does not have every letter of the alphabet in it. But there are a few exceptions in Tanakh. And so Rashi says on one Pasuk in Tanakh, Rashi says, I don't know why this Pasuk isn't in that listing. So you look at that and you say, how did Rashi notice? Excuse me? What did Rashi just say? He has no other questions. In all of Tanakh, Rashi doesn't ask the question. One Pasuk in Tanakh, Rashi says, this Pasuk has every letter of the Hebrew alphabet in it, and it's not listed in the Medrash as one of the Psukim that has every letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and I don't know why. How did Rashi notice that? Just, you start realizing there's genius here. You read Rashi simply, and you read it because part of his genius was that he wrote simply. But when you hit a Rashi like that, you start realizing I'm standing in front of a genius here. He wrote on my level, or on a level that I can understand. So the first concept that we need in order to connect to what Ramban is saying is respect. Respect that Ramban is saying, Moshe could stand firmly and say, my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather. You have to respect them in order to say that. And perhaps that's what Rav Herschel Schachter once suggested, that we're taught that when the Jews left Mitzrayim, when they left Egypt, so they reached Mara, and in Mara they were given three mitzvot. And one of them is kibud avim, honoring their parents. So he suggested they needed that mitzvah because you can't build the people's understanding and connection to Hashem without respecting their tradition. If you can have this basis that Ramban is saying, then you can have it. If you don't respect your parents, then I don't know if they're telling the truth, so it doesn't start. The second point we have to think about is what happened in the world. How did the rest of the world go wrong? Why was the rest of the world accepting paganism? Why is Avraham a standalone? If the tradition was as firm as we're understanding now, Moshe Rabbeinu can say, I have a tradition. Well, where was the world during the time of Avram? Why was Avram a lone voice? So we're going to have to hear the Ramban out, but let's bear in mind these two points as we go along. Did Avram Avinu have a tradition, or did he discover things himself? Well, if there was a tradition, then why did he need to do self-discovery? So we'll continue Bezat Shem next time. But these are points to bear in mind as we move on.
Because the parent, the grandparent, two generations can go way off the tradition. So, how still give them up? Did Terach have the tradition? I mean, you know, right.
That's exactly the question. How did that happen?
It happens today. You see many people here whose parents, they may have on some level instilled something, that they're still by a thread or two hanging. But consciously, if they ask them, is true? Our history, they would say, as far as we know, no.
Well, also say there isn't the same level of trust today that there was.
Well, there's two different things. I agree with that, but Kevin Ava M is still, you know, it's almost like you have to separate the two. You give them honor, but you don't say everything that they say is legitimately part of the tradition. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here mostly.
It's a